From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of November, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets. We'll do that with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. We'll also discuss solar farms and legal issues related to them with Garrett Talgett. He's from Illinois Farm Bureau. And then as we wrap up our time together, Mark Russo will be here from Everstream Analytics. On this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, it's coming to you today from Illinois Valley Community College, just outside of LaSalle at the Landowners Conference. More on that in a moment, too.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Kurt Kimmel is now here. He's with AgMarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thanks for being with us during this Thanksgiving week. We appreciate it.
Well, glad to be here. Yes, it is a shortened trade week for sure. We've got full activity till Wednesday's close. Of course, no market on Thursday or Thursday evening, and the greens resume trade Friday morning at 8:30 until 12:05. So it'll give you a chance to get some last-minute Black Friday specials.
Well, will there be Black Friday specials in the commodities is the question, and we'd really like the specials to be high-priced. I don't know that that's going to happen.
I don't know. It feels like the bear's getting Thanksgiving here, so hopefully the bull have a Christmas. But actually, this coming Friday could be kind of a market to watch. Several things is we have first nose day Friday morning. So if you're along the December grain contracts, you probably might want to be out of that by Wednesday's close. Then also, it's end of the month, and so things could come together here, and as you see some volatility, oftentimes there's some volatility on Friday after Thanksgiving. I know Ag Resource has in the past put out studies what the market does the day before Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving, and sometimes that could be quite interesting to watch. But we've got a few days to get there. Last night, the bean market actually gapped higher above Friday's high there. We had some pretty good enthusiasm, mainly spread activity, buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat. But as the day session has worn on in through here, we've retreated backwards here. Beans are slightly higher. At this rate, we'll see if they finish higher. This morning, we did see 454,000 tons of corn sold to Mexico. A large portion of that was the old crop, and a little bit of new crop involved in there. So Mexico continues to be our best customer, trying to get some purchases on the books here. The trade kind of feels this is front-loaded demand, but we'll take it. We'll take it for sure. This morning's export inspections report was fairly solid. Corn, 903,000 tons. That's kind of at the upper end of the range. Bean shipments, 2.1 million metric tons. That's kind of at the upper end. So we're shipping out what we sold. And once we get these bushels shipped out, it's kind of awful hard for them to cancel. So overall, demand's fairly good. And we'd like to see some more business continue here as we wrap up 2024.
Speaking of demand being good, over the weekend, I was fiddling with the EIA.gov website. That's the Energy Information Agency, looking at some of the ethanol numbers, and pulled up a table which showed me that the first 3 weeks of November, ethanol production was 1.1 million gallons or more per week. All three of those are records, and never before since 2010 have there been three in a row. Also, the five highest numbers come from this year since July. Just a real rip-roaring success for ethanol. I suspect that because it's a holiday week, that'll end this week. But I'm wondering how you view that marketplace and its ability to support either the futures markets or more likely the basis and cash markets across the Midwest.
Yeah, mainly the cash side of the equation. If you look at these ethanol plants, they've been fairly aggressive trying to gather some inventory here going into the first quarter. You know, this ethanol demand is relatively strong. Just a word of caution is last week we kind of started to see a little bit of negative margins show up in the ethanol side. So we'll see if that continues or not. But no, this energy sector's relatively strong in here. We feel the ethanol side of the equation plus the export side of the equation for corn's going to keep that supply-demand balance sheet a little tighter than what they were looking at here previously, you know, below this 2 billion bushel mark.
What do you see next week once we get past this holiday?
Well, a lot of trade shows, a lot of meetings, I tell you. It's here already. But I would think that we'll focus on that South American forecast. That's kind of going to be the driving factor here. Then, two, we'll continue to monitor the political side of the equation here to see which way the wind's blowing there. But Friday, we finished up the December puts and calls. I was kind of surprised that open interest in the December contract only went down about 50,000 contracts. We still have a lot of open interest. As of Friday, about 270,000 contracts in the December corn futures. Typically, we lose a lot more open interest during option expiration because the puts and calls all match up with some futures. But we've got some liquidation to go into that December contract. But the thing is, the liquidation's to the upside. Even though the market's down today, December corn's down 2 cents, and the March corn's down 3 cents. So this upfront corn's holding its ground, Todd.
You mentioned that a lot of things will be happening next week. I take it you'll be in Peoria probably at the farm show?
Unfortunately, we've been there for years and years and years, and we've kind of stepped aside from that particular show as an exhibitor. But yes, we'll be there physically to look around and shake some hands. But yeah, for the first time in a long time, we won't have a booth there.
Well, I'll tell you what, drop by University of Illinois Extension because we will be there for the first time in a very long time in a much larger way. Oh. The Farm Doc team will be in as well as some of the crop scientists. And Kurt, you're always welcome because naturally folks will want to see you as well. So we'll be looking forward to that. Now, one last thing. As we get to the end of the year, and producers are thinking, well, maybe I need to have some sales made for whatever reason. They have to pay bills. Should they sell corn or should they sell soybeans?
Well, they pretty well sold the beans. Gosh, I visit a lot of producers and a lot of elevators, and particularly some elevators. One elevator particularly purchased 80% of the beans they brought in, so pretty well sold up on beans. So corn is the next marketing challenge here, and we're kind of fearful that we could see the market kind of recede here after the first year as producers generate some cash flow needs to get those bills paid.
Hey, thank you much, Kurt.
You bet. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. I spoke with him not long before the close, and I'm really about an hour before the close, here for the Marketing Report this afternoon. Do visit our website. There you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the 13th of December. Don't wait. Do it right now at willag.org. We're here at the Landowners Conference at Illinois Valley Community College, just outside of Peru, in Oglesby, in fact. Today, we've been talking about many topics, one of them that is familiar across the state of Illinois and the Midwest, controversial as well, are solar installments, solar farms, and what that means. The Illinois Farm Bureau sent a representative to speak to those gathered here today. His name is Garrett Talgett, and he joins us now to take some of this topic up. There are couple things I think that were key in the conversation you had with those gathered today. First was, do get an attorney involved in the process if you're contacted and the solar farm is maybe getting closer to being installed.
Absolutely. And I would say that if you're actually serious about this, I mean, if you're not serious about it, you can throw it away because there's no eminent domain. There's no condemnation proceedings. So if you don't want it, you can just toss it in the garbage. But if you have even a little bit of interest, I would say before signing anything, I would certainly talk to a lawyer. The leases are many pages. They are complex. This is not something I don't think that a landowner would be well advised to just sort of, you know, kind of sign and do a little bit of self-help, legal Zoom, and then go on their way.
So the question often comes up is, why would you want to do that? And from a farmer's perspective, a landowner who is a farmer that's owning the land, it is one thing. From an absentee landowner's perspective, it is entirely different. Because the offer here for a farmer would be maybe two, maybe three times, I doubt three, but probably two times the income off of that property. For a landowner who is an absentee landowner, could be four times that amount. And that is a relatively large incentive. So I can see why it is that landowners might be interested in having a solar farm installed over a lengthy period of time. What are the key takeaways from your conversation with them this morning about the issues related to these installments and what they need to really consider?
So I guess in terms of key takeaways, I would say, first of all, decommissioning. What is going to happen at the end of the lease agreement, if you're signing a long-term lease agreement that's going to be 20, 30, 40, 50, even 60 years, it's possible and maybe even likely in some instances that lease agreement is going to outlive you as the landowner. So you want to make sure that that thing is really buttoned up, and you also want to make sure that there are some provisions in your lease agreement that are going to govern at the end of the lease agreement, whenever that ends, whether it's at year 20 or maybe even earlier or at year 60. What is going to happen to the property? What's going to happen to the panels? Are the panels going to be removed? Who's going to pay for the removal of the panels? Now, there are some state laws that sort of try to govern that, and there's some other documents, some agreements between the Illinois Department of Agriculture and the solar developer that are going to govern that. But you want to sort of have that complete picture of, okay, in 50 years, what is going to happen to the property? Is it going to be taken back to its original state, at least to its original productivity? So hopefully you can work with a lawyer to make, I'll say, as sure as one can be, because we all know there's no guarantees in life. So as sure as one can be that that property is going to be returned to its previous productivity. I would say that's oftentimes maybe the most pressing question that we get.
So when you discussed this and you mentioned that there are some state laws, there's an Illinois Department of Ag function in the middle of this as well. And it's quite likely that the solar side will tell you about that, but that's not good enough in your opinion, that you really need to have more protection than what is already in place.
Well, I think at a bare minimum, you have to A, know what protections are in place, because it's not necessarily apparent. So you have to know what protections are in place. You have to know what the solar developer is going to be agreeing with the Department of Agriculture to do. And then you have to, at least, I would say at a minimum, work with your attorney to sort of incorporate what they have told the Department of Agriculture they're going to do into your own lease. So then if, I mean, again, the goal is to make sure that you don't need to take any legal action later. But if there was a need, you could at least rely on your own lease to say, solar developer said that they were going to do X, Y, and Z to the Department of Agriculture. I'm incorporating all of that at minimum into my own lease. I also think that many attorneys will take what the solar company and the DOA agreed to, and they will take that and they'll modify it and they'll sort of like make it their own so that, again, the landowner is completely protected, at least as protected as they possibly can be.
What are the other key takeaways?
I would say, let me think here.
Subrogation?
Insurance issues. That's an important one. Waivers of subrogation have been coming up a lot lately. That's not an easy thing to explain on a radio broadcast, but I would say you got to make sure that if there is something in your lease that's going to prevent your insurer from becoming whole on a claim that they might have paid out on your behalf, even though it maybe wasn't your fault, that insurer has the opportunity to go and seek repayment essentially from the at-fault party's insurer. And we have seen some leases that seek to prevent that. And before you would sign something like that, it'd be very important to talk to your insurer to make sure that that is kosher with them, I will say. I would say another sort of...
What about site plans? You mentioned those as well.
That's a very good point. Thanks, Todd. I think it would be, you'd be well advised as a landowner to try to make sure that you have at least some say as to where the property, or I should say, where the solar farm is going to be on the property. So first of all, I would want to have a good idea of if your parcel that you are discussing leasing to the solar company is 80 acres, for example, how much of my 80 are you going to use? If you're only going to use part of it, well, where is it going to be in terms of that part that you want to use? Is it in the middle? Is it in the corner? Can I make some recommendations if I'm the landowner? Can I say, hey, listen, if it's all the same to you, if it's commercially reasonable or feasible to put it over here in this corner or over there in that corner, could you be required to do so? Ultimately, in a perfect world, you would have sort of... the ability to approve that site plan is to, and to sort of be able to approve if it's going to be put on the property, I want to put over here. Also, one thing that you might want to consider is acreage guarantees. You talked about the dollars. The dollars can be high, but at some point, if you own 80 acres and the solar company is only going to use 5, you might want to ask yourself, is it worth it? Now, it may be worth it. I'm not saying that it's not worth it. But there might be sort of an acreage threshold where you might say to yourself, this is not worth it anymore. And so again, working with your attorney to sort of try to negotiate something like that, saying, you know, yeah, you can use as much of my 80 as you wish, but at the end of the day, I want to make sure that I get paid for at least X number of acres of that 80.
Government programs have been around for a long time. Now I'm talking about farm programs. You did mention base acres. These are important to producers as it's related to FSA, their yields, the how they might be involved in government programs. If you're taking a farm out of production, do those base acres remain in the FSA database?
Todd, that's a very good question. And that's one thing that we always tell landowners. There's a lot of people that you should be talking with if you are actually interested in entering into one of these solar leases. One of them, obviously, is an attorney that has experience in this arena, we'll say. You might talk to family members, accountants, things like that. Another really critical piece of that you absolutely need to be talking to is the FSA office to ask them, okay, what is going to happen if I sign this lease A? And then B, more importantly, and I think more relevantly, if it gets built, if there is a solar farm that is built on my parcel, what is going to happen to my base acres that are reported on the 578? If you talk to the FSA office, I'm not going to speak for the FSA office, but if you talk to the FSA office, I think that what you might find is the FSA office might tell you that those are going to be, that those acres that are in the footprint of the solar farm are going to be removed from base, which makes sense because they're no longer in agricultural production. Now, what you might also find, though, is that if in 20, 40, 50, 60 years, if the panels are removed, if all of that infrastructure is removed and it's returned to agricultural production, will those acres go back into your base? And the answer that you might hear from FSA is that no, they probably won't. And so, again, that's just one of those things, not saying that you should or shouldn't enter into a lease, but eyes wide open. You want to make sure that you know what's going to happen 50 years from now versus just tomorrow.
Any final words of wisdom for those and many farmers and landowners will be contacted that might be contacted by some company or someone that's interested in their parcel as it's related to a solar farm?
I would say that you would probably not be well advised to sign anything at all until you've talked with a lawyer. You know, this morning, Todd, we had some questions and some discussion with some of the audience members about, for example, letters of intent. You know, and the question was, well, should we sign a letter of intent? And, you know, first of all, I'm not giving any legal advice. That's not why I'm here. But I think that the question of that or I think that the answer to that question is, well, what does the letter of intent say? What are you actually binding yourself to do? And so based on that, I'm going to sort of end kind of where we started. I think it's very critical that you talk to an attorney that has experience with these prior to really signing anything. I've heard stories, and again, they're just stories. I have no idea if they're true, honestly, but I've heard stories of, you know, solar developers saying, well, you know, yeah, we're going to sign a lease, but I want you to first sign this letter of intent before I give you the lease. And I would just say that before you sign anything, make sure that you know what you're getting into so that you don't accidentally bind yourself to do something in the future that you maybe weren't planning on doing, or that you thought there was some, you know, option to, you know, make some changes or something like that. So I would say that the overall kind of message, I think the most important critical piece is talk to a lawyer that has been doing these and who knows what they're doing prior to signing anything.
Garrett, thank you very much.
Thanks a bunch, Todd.
Garrett Talgett is with the Illinois Farm Bureau. He spoke this morning at the Landowners Conference at Illinois Valley Community College in Oglesby. Mark Russo is with us now. He's at Everstream Analytics to help take a quick look at the weather forecast. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello there, Todd.
Let's start with this Thanksgiving week forecast. What do things look like in the Midwest?
Well, we are going to see a transition here this week from, again, some of the more recent milder conditions to much colder temperatures coming in, especially as we get into this holiday weekend and on into next week. But also of note, we are going to see at least some chances for precipitation, including some snow. In fact, coming up here on Wednesday and on into Wednesday night, there is going to be a storm system tracking across the Midwest. It does look to take a more southern route, but on the northern part of that system, there will be some snow activity in sections of central Illinois, central Indiana, if the current storm track holds as projected. This does not look to be any kind of big, you know, major snowstorm, but certainly several inches here of snow is expected along with some gusty winds in relatively small swath of the Corn Belt.
And then in South America, what do you see?
Yeah, we see favorable weather across virtually all of the summer crop growing areas, some of the recent dry pockets in Paraguay, southern Brazil, and Argentina. They've improved. In fact, in Argentina, they got big thunderstorms over the past 24 hours across the northern grain belt, and more rain is coming up here, and that will continue to maintain favorable growing conditions. A lack of any kind of extreme heat will also be favorable, and right now we're seeing no issues developing in South America through the early part of December.
I'll talk with you again next week, Mark.
Sounds great. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.